What's good, y'all? For first-time listeners, welcome to the Words Matter Pod with Akil Pinnock. And for those who've tuned in before, welcome back. It's been a month since I've spoken to y'all and released an episode. Sorry for the inconsistency, but I'm heavily in the pursuit of booking bigger guests. So that is as challenging as you would expect, especially being out here in LA when I'm still very new. But that's not an excuse, of course. But I am excited for what's next on the Words Matter journey. For those of you who continue to watch, I appreciate that. Last Friday, someone that I don't even know, and I'm going to say his name. I hope I don't butcher your name. Bassy Aqua on Twitter DM me just showing love and saying that he fucked with the podcast. So shout out to you, Bassy Aqua, for consuming the podcast, however you do. And please spread the word if you're not doing that already. You know, share links, everything. Show Instagram page, Twitter page, all of that. It feels good that something that you create and invest in financially, physically, and emotionally is being validated. It doesn't matter if it's one person in Anchorage, Alaska, or 100,000 people in New York. And speaking of New York, I was back home this past weekend on the East Coast at my boy Marcus's wedding. Congrats to Marcus and Allison again. It was like a high school reunion. So many people that I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school with were just showing me love, saying that they're proud of me and always knew that I would be doing something like this. I kind of get awkward receiving so much praise, but I'm learning to give myself the same praise that people have for me. But I'm truly humbled by anyone that takes the time out of their day to watch or listen to Words Matter. So thank you again. Now, finally, to get into this week's episode, we're back at Creative Sounds Recording Studios, this time with owner and overall Renaissance man, Pusha Rod. Rod spoke about growing up on the east side of South Central Los Angeles, but never allowing the negative stereotypes about his community to define him while also taking accountability for the roles that he's played in his life. After spending so much of his youth involved in crime as a means of survival, Rod finally began to embrace his artistic abilities when his friend and rapper YG gave him an ultimatum to change his life during his own ascent. Rod later leveraged his valued opinions in studio sessions with YG and Mustard as a self-proclaimed professional homie into eventually becoming an A&R at Interscope Records and ended up managing his friend YG down the line. We briefly spoke about Rod's time at Interscope, finally receiving his Grammy in the mail for being co-writer on LMA's 2018 hit Boot Up, which if you watch the episode, he shows us the Grammy. So yes, I was in the presence of a physical Grammy looking shiny and had an aura around it and all that. But he spoke about what it means to be a hustler. We spoke about what Rod learned from all of his different business ventures that he's been a part of and much more. Much love to Pusha Rod for allowing me into his place of business to conduct this interview and for being so transparent with me during the interview. For any singer, songwriter or rapper in LA, check out Creative Sound Studios. Please like, comment, and subscribe. Words Matter. Welcome to the Words Matter Pod with Akil Pinnock, a podcast dedicated to storytellers. I'm back at Creative Sounds Recording Studios, this time with the owner, Pusha Rod. Push recently received a Grammy in the mail as co-writer for LMA's 2018 hit Boot Up. Been in the music business for a while, now doing miscellaneous but necessary things. He was a former A&R at Interscope, and now he's the owner of Creative Sounds Recording Studios. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm good, bro. Appreciate you having me. Appreciate you coming here doing this at Creative Sounds, man. Life is good.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like life is good, too, for sure.
Life is life in right now, man.
Yeah, the Grammy sitting over there.
Hell yeah.
Beautiful. I never seen one of those in my life.
Go ahead and take a shot out of it before we get out of here, you feel me?
Hmm?
Got to take a shot.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely. Never thought I'd be doing that, but I'm definitely looking forward to doing that. Where are you from?
I'm from Los Angeles. I'm from the east side, to be exact, east side of South Central. I grew up on, like, 84th between Main and Broadway.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, how would you describe yourself? I just described a little bit about you, but how would you describe yourself?
I always like to describe myself, honestly, as a professional homie. I'm with all the homie shit. I'm with all the turn up. I'm with all the hangout, the party, and whatever it is. But I'm also about my business and business first. So yeah, I like to call myself a professional homie, just all the way around.
Yeah. And you know, that term might have like a negative connotation in a way, because you know, you see rappers and you see people in the studio and you know, everybody might not know like what their role is or whatever. You might have like some people that feel like, you know, like they're, you know, they're owed certain things, but you know, you made something out of like being a professional homie.
Yeah, I mean, it's always like, if your homie's doing something and it's positive and it's succeeding, it's, and it's working, it's always like, if you're around, you either become part of that ship and help big build it and make it bigger, or you just there weighing it down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good analogy for sure. So what was life like, you know, on the east side of South Central?
You know, life on the east side. You know, it's typical shit. I feel like everybody everywhere go through shit. I don't want to be the guy to say, oh, I'm from the east side, we had it worse than the people on the west side. But the west side people had it worse than the people in down. Like, it ain't none of that. I'm from L.A. I'm from the side of town that I'm from. And I just, like, strive to try to make sure that I wouldn't become the quote-unquote stereotype. And when I say quote-unquote stereotype, it's not just about being from east side. It's not just about being from L.A. It's like, what they quote-unquote try to say us as black men are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are some of those things, if you could, you know, go a little deeper into that?
Fake hustlers, lazy, yeah. People with no real ambition, trying to get over on the government, X, Y, and Z. All the shit, all the stereotypes that they try to say. A lot of stuff that I seen growing up. Some of the stuff I saw in my own household, and I just was like, that's not going to be me.
Yeah. Speaking about your household, like, what was the family life like?
My mother died when I was one. My dad got on right after my mom died. I was raised by my grandmother until the court said I couldn't anymore, and then after that, I was raised by my aunts. Yeah, I mean, like I'm not one of those people out here trying to sell a sad story or a sad story, nothing like that. Like, everybody go through shit in life, you know, and me not having a mom is just one of the things that I went through. But
yeah.
I wasn't going to be a person who, like, oh, well, my life didn't turn out good because I didn't have a mom. Like, it's just like, I'm not a broken record. Like, yeah. I'm here to sell my own story, and I'm here to create my own story. And just understanding that anything is achievable. And that's, like, one of the things my granny always kind of, like, tried to put in the back of my head, was, like, you can do whatever you want, but it's about how much time and energy you put in it. And I feel like people think if they put a lot of time in something that it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
But it's not just about the time you put in, but the amount of energy you put in when you're putting in your time. Like, if you're giving C-level work, you're going to be a C-level nigga. Like, if you giving 110 every single day at everything you do, giving it your all, like, that 110 is going to add up. Yeah. Like, and it's going to make you to be that next level. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, I just feel like so many people get lost in, like, what their parents had or mm-hmm. what their parents didn't have or the situation they come from, and try to say, like, that's part of my narrative. And it's just like, nah, I feel like those things are what helped make me more strong and gave me more ambition, because it's a lot of people out here who don't have ambition, and it's a lot, and they come from millions. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, everything is kind of like a gift and a curse, I would say. Like, and it's just how you take what comes at you and deal it back out.
Yeah. So it seems like you're like a cup half full kind of guy.
Facts.
Yeah.
1,000%. I'm going to always look at it like that, because I came from nothing. I didn't have nothing.
Yeah. So, you know, with all that, you know, everything in the household and all that, what were you involved with as a child? You know, like, what was Pusha Rod doing, and that probably led him to where he's at right now?
Shit, honestly, God rest in peace, my cousin, Quick Keyshawn, like, we started hustling early. Like, we started hustling, like, in seventh grade, like, because of what we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And we was tired of not having certain things, so we went out to try to figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that led to what it led to, but it also led to us having the things that we wanted. And, you know, young, you don't really realize like, oh, this is bad. Like, I'm just trying to get what I'm trying to get. I'm trying to get what I need. And that was, like, the focus point to is, like, you start growing in life and then you start realizing, okay, if I take that same amount of energy and I apply it this way and something else, it the sky's the limit on how far I can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw an interview you did with, came out like 3 weeks ago with Clap It Up LA. You spoke about how you were in the streets and, you know, you went to high school and hung out with Tyler, the Creator, and other Odd Future members. And you know, I may be wrong, but I feel like compared to like New York, where I'm from, there's more of a like intermingling with like street dudes and like the nerdy artsy kids.
Fuck no. I would say it's a little mixture anywhere, everywhere, because 9 times out of 10, a nerdy artsy kid's got a brother or sister or cousin that gangbang.
Yeah.
Like, we all hang out with each other no matter what. It just so happened that we went to the same high school. But I'll be lying to you if I told you that me and Tyler talked every day in high school. We knew each other in high school. We said, what's up? Me and Lionel was on the same football team and hung out a lot more and stuff like that. Like, but I mean, I feel like it's really, like, I don't know. I only lived here in Los Angeles, so I can't really speak for other places. But, like, I know a lot of people, like, who, like, out what you would quote-unquote call nerds, but they know the street niggas. Mm-hmm. The street niggas know them. So, it's like, it's not about that. It's how you intermingle. Like, it's more about that, like. But, like, yeah, bro, Tyler and them used to be at the top of the hill. I used to be at the bottom. Like, it was two separate sections at Westchester. But we knew each other.
Yeah.
It's always been cool. We see each other. It's always love. It's always great to know that, damn, you know somebody from back then and you see that they're doing well today. So you don't have to start one of them vague conversations. Yeah, like, oh, bro, how's everything been? How you doing? Like, you're like, nigga, I see you.
Yeah,
you
see shining. What you're doing. Yeah.
Nigga, keep it up, bro. Like, we all doing it for the same cause at the end of the day, is to win, like, and to put the city on. Like, I don't care if you're a rocker, if you're a punk rocker, if you make alternative music, if you, like, bro, if everything you're doing to push the West Coast, I'm pushing you. Like, honestly.
Yeah. No, I get that. Now, you know, I was asking that because, you know, I just feel like sometimes, you know, guys won't hang out with certain dudes because they feel like they wear those or something like that, right? You know, street guys might not hang out with the guys that's, like, into things that hood niggas is not into.
But you from New York, right?
Yeah.
But when you say that, bro, look at, like, a Rocky.
Yeah, and
Yams.
I feel like Rocky kind of, like, made it more acceptable. You know, he kind of brought that downtown culture to Harlem, uptown.
But you can't really say that, bro, because look at Kanye.
True.
Like, look at Mos Def. Look at, like, bro, it's so many people you can, like, go on and name, like, over time. Like, I honestly just feel like it's however comfortable you are as you as a person and how you interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think, like, every gangbanger got a nerd sister or cousin, or like every book smart person got a relative that's heavily in the streets. So it's like, bro, it all, like, we all humans at the end of the day. It all just rotates with each other. It's how you choose to alienate yourself.
Yeah,
that's the bigger thing, and I feel like that's what needs to be talked more about in society. Like, because people choose to alienate themselves away from society or away from certain things. And there are some people who are just open to everything. Like me, bro. I'm open to everything and everybody, bro. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what ethnicity you are. I don't care, like, who you... Bro, if you a good person, you a good person.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck the streets. Fuck the books. Fuck all the other shit. It's about your integrity as a person with me.
That's a fact. All right, so, yeah, so, you know, in the streets, and then over time you end up, you know, fast forward a little bit, you end up being in the studio and with YG and Mustard, and you like a fly on the wall, and they respect your honest input. And that led to you working as an A&R at Interscope, but, like, what happened between that time of you being a fly on the wall to you being an A&R?
Honestly, it was just honesty. These are my friends. I ain't make music. I was just there because I ain't have nothing else to do. It's either be in the streets or be at the studio. Mm-hmm. I saw what I consider magic being created in front of my eyes. I saw sound being developed and created between two people in front of my eyes that was new. So, like, it was interesting. But it was like, you know, you hear one record, and this record was better than this record or this record. Like, any artist is always like that. Then one day, nigga just asks, and you might say something. But it's not about what you say, it's how much you believe in what you say.
Yeah.
Like, because anybody can say, oh yeah, this hard. But why? Anybody can say, oh, I don't like that song. But why?
Yeah.
If you know, even if you wrong to the mass, if you know why you don't like something, who can tell you your opinion is wrong?
Yeah. Music's so subjective.
Exactly. And it was like, me believing in that, me believing in how I feel about what I'm saying is right. And then as far as like getting to Interscope, shout out Joey Mandus, shout out fucking Sycamore. Sycamore was YG's A&R. Sycamore was the one who told me I was A&R.
So he's a legend.
I was a homie. I felt that I was doing what a real friend would do. Because you always hear in every story, all these yes men, everybody around you just want to go with the flow and say yes to be your friend. It's like, if we already friends, I'm not about to lie to you just to stay your friend.
Yeah.
If I got to lie to you to stay your friend, I must not be your friend.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, like, I believe it's more about that, and it's more in that. And it's more in, like, fuck being honest to the next person. And this took me a long time to even realize for myself. It's not about being honest to the next person for the next person. It's about being honest to the next person for yourself.
Mm.
Because, like, everything you say, you got to live with at night. You know, you can go into these meetings or have these conversations, say a whole bunch of shit. Then when you get home and you lay down at night, you replaying in your mind what you said all day. And how this went, like, damn, I shouldn't have said that. Damn, that might have fucked this up. Like, you have to live with every word that comes out your mouth. Like,
or I should have said something.
Exactly. Like, don't be that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I try to not be, is that person. Like, and of course, my mouth, my word, shouldn't have got me in trouble before. But it's like, at the same time, people respect you.
For
And... I saw this interview the other day on Instagram, and it was crazy because, like, it felt so surreal to me because, like, people are really nowadays scared to tell the truth because with how the next person going to view them or what the next person going to say or what the next person going to do. And it's like, how are you living your life that way?
Mm.
And for me, I'm just not trying to live my life that way. I'm trying to live my life to be the most honest person I can possibly be to myself. And that's going to help me sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't got it all together, even if shit is burning down, if I know I'm trying and I know I'm giving it my all, shit, there's going to be light at the end of that tunnel. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's really how you view yourself and the amount of respect you give to yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, was your opinion, I mean, I know it's difficult, artists, because artists could be sensitive. So, you know, you giving your opinion and they may respect it, but do they respect it right away?
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes no, but that's going to be your it factor.
Yeah.
That's what's going to make them always come back to you. Nigga, when you say something and they don't like it, are you going to be like, yeah, you know what? You're right to stop fighting.
Mm.
Are you going to double down because that's what you believe in? And niggas going to respect the nigga who double down every time.
Yeah.
Like.
For sure. Yeah, nah, you definitely got to stand firm, especially, you know, you trying to.
But ignorance is bliss now. Like,
yeah,
if you find out something, find out something's wrong, and you still try to double down, that's something totally different. But like, based on opinion or feeling, like if that's how you feel, who can tell you you're wrong? Everybody has their own personal feelings.
Yeah.
Nobody's feelings is subjected to the next person's.
Yeah.
Like, so like, I feel like life is more based off of that and how you like gauge into that and how you respect that. Cause you at the end of the day, bro, everything you do, you gotta look in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta sleep with yourself. You got this conscience. You got this other person talking in your head. And I know everybody got somebody else talking in their head. Every time you try to close your eyes, nigga, you replaying the day. You replaying everything you went through. Like, damn, I should have. I got so tired of telling myself I should have.
Should have, yeah.
If I feel it, I'm going to. And that's where I'm at in life.
Mm-hmm. Man. Dropping jewels early. We just started.
Hey, man. I'm just here to speak my truth.
Oh, man. So, I mean, has telling the truth gotten you in trouble?
1,000%. And I will get in trouble again.
In the business?
1,000%. Yeah. I've lost friends for it. But it is what it is. But at the same time, like, I will be a devil's advocate if I didn't be honest and say that, bro, I didn't go through a spiraled spell of lying.
Mm.
Like, everybody didn't did it.
A lot of people, like,
I ain't gonna
honest.
Say everybody didn't did it. Yeah, but I can speak for myself and I can say I did it. And the main reason I was doing it to a certain degree when I stepped back and realized was seeking approval from other people.
Lying comes out of insecurity.
You know, so it's like, once you realize that and realize where certain relationships or certain situations or certain friendships put a hinder on you, is how do you grow from that? You know, and like, none of us have it all figured out. None of us is perfect. But it's like, it's when you understand what you were doing wrong and how you were moving and how you try to fix it. But now, if you fix it and people still judge you based off the past, you got to leave that demon with them. Like, and that's how I feel on anything, is like, because nobody's perfect. Like, if I can forgive you for something,
yeah,
I'm not going to harp on it. I'm not going to hold it over your head. If I forgave you, I got to act like it never happened.
Mm.
Like, in order to regrow or rekindle or however things must go. But, like, if I forgave you for something, but every time something else happened, I bring up that, I never honestly forgave you for something.
Mm.
So, like, just understanding how shit like that is and moving a certain type of way when you see people move like that with you. And at the end of the day, it's not, you don't move spiteful, yeah, or you don't do any, you just understand what the situation is, and maybe a friendship outgrew itself.
Yeah.
Maybe a relationship outgrew itself or anything because of the situations that happened before. And if the situations are too detrimental to repair the situation, then it is what it is. You have to move on in life and just try to figure out how to be the best, yeah, version of yourself,
yeah,
in everything you do moving forward. Mm-hmm. So you don't go down those same spirals.
Yeah. So speaking about forgiveness, you know, people, you know, it's such a cliche. People talk about, I forgive, but I don't forget. But you're saying, like, if you are always, like, bringing up what a person did that was wrong to you, then you didn't truly forgive them. So do you believe in forgiving and not forgetting?
I will remember something because I'm human. Everybody's always going to remember something. It's the difference between remembering something and throwing something in somebody's face or using something, yeah, that somebody did in the past
to manipulate
what's going on in the future.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, it's a thin line between loyalty and stupidity.
Mm.
Like, and, like, I had to learn that thin line for myself, you know. And I feel like we all have to at some point in life, because it's going to help you grow. Like, some things, some people who were once there might not always be there. Like, but it's how you move. situations after that or through that.
Yeah. Nah, definitely appreciate your perspective on that for sure. Definitely some things for people to think about. You know, just going back to the music, before you was in the studio, like, what was your musical background? I mean, you, we all grow up loving hip hop, but like, were you, did you ever have it? What?
No, musical background
at all.
Nigga, only thing you know what's crazy? I don't know if this count, but I was like anybody from the East Side who knew me, like growing up, I used to throw parties. That's like the biggest musical background I have. Like one of my other cousins, John Carter, Free John Carter, he started throwing parties when I was like in the 8th grade, and he was probably in the 11th. Yeah. He was throwing them in his mom's backyard. And so she was like, "Nigga, what? I'm trying to throw parties with you. What can I do? I'm seeing you making this money. I'm counting it with you. What can I do to get it?" So then it got to this point where like the parties really start cracking, and after a certain time, he'll be at the front collecting the money. So he'll let me DJ.
Yeah.
And like, bro, I ain't really know what I was doing. Nigga, I'm just, nigga, picking up CDs, playing
on a
like,
CDJ?
Yeah, bro. Like, I did not have no type of experience. But it's like, bro, you know, people come and say, "Oh, I like this song. You play this song." Then you start remembering, "Oh, people like this song. This song sounds better." So, like, I was doing that. But, like, as far as, like, musical background, like, nah, none. Like, bro, the first album I ever bought was the Carter 2.
Like, yeah.
Lil Wayne is the reason why I love music.
Yeah.
Like I ain't really grow up listening to music, caring about music. Like, bro, I was off the porch at 12 years old. Like,
yeah.
I was in, like, my childhood was different for a lot of reasons.
You didn't consume yourself in, like, arts and culture yet because you were dealing with reality.
Yeah, bro. Like, it's crazy because, like, I started doing tattoos when I was, like, 17, 18. But I started doing tattoos when I was 17, 18, honestly, because I was gangbanging at 12, 13, and I was tagging.
Mm.
While the older homies is out putting in.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me go strike up.
Mm-hmm.
And it went from striking up to drawing on paper. My older sister, like, she's incredible, bro. Like, she could sit here and draw both of us sitting right here in, like, 5 minutes. But, like, me, like, art and all that shit came a lot later for me. And then it was like, yeah, going to juvenile hall and stuff like that and sitting down. Like, it's like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Doodling and shit. So then you come home, you drawing a little more. Oh, fuck it, let me try the tattoo. Let me see where this go. Man, I've been fucked up so many homies. But I also, it's crazy because, bro, it's some people out here who I've done amazing tattoos on. And it's some people out here I just actually just fucked up on. And it's some people out here who don't even care that I fucked up because it's like they literally come, "Hey, bro, you remember, bro, this was like 2011, bro. You came to my mom's house and did my tattoo." Nigga, I'd be like, "Damn, for real, let me see." I'd be nervous as fuck like, "Bro, is this one of the good ones or this?" Bro, but, you know, one thing that opened me up about is, like, every tattoo holds a memory.
Yeah.
Like, and whether if the tattoo didn't come out the best, whatever that person was going through in their life, a reason why they got the tattoo means so much more to me.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I remember one time, bro, I've never did a portrait before in my life. And nigga called me to do a tattoo, and it was a portrait. And I said, "Bro, I don't do portraits. I do names and shit like
easy,
that."
Easy
like,
stuff.
He's like, "Nah, bro. Like, my mom just died. Like, I tried my hardest. Tried my hardest.
Damn.
Like, focused. Like, so, like, tried to get." And it's like, and you know, as an artist, you always a critiquer of your own work. So, like, damn, I wish this could have been so much better. But bro loved it.
Yeah.
You loved it? I loved it.
Yeah.
And it's like, in the back of my mind, it's like, damn, bro, I wish this was better. But it's like, bro,
it looked like his mom to him.
Yeah.
So
it felt like his mom to him. And that's like the biggest bigger part because, like, even, like, for me, like, bro, like, my throat, I got this Jesus tatted my first time going to Japan in the hotel room, laying off of the bed. Like, and I, like, when I talk about the tattoo, I can remember that whole day. I can remember getting that tattoo. I can remember what happened. I remember telling the homie Nene to pull up, like, the whole scenario. Like, YG was supposed to get a tattoo, but YG was drunk and fell asleep, and I got a tattoo. Like, but it's like, I remember the whole day, and it's like, that means so much more to me than a tattoo. So, like, kind of understand.
Yeah.
My bad, bro. I be getting off topic, I know.
Nah, it's all good, though, because it's all a part of the story. It's really, I mean, what it exactly is the topic, you know? You know, you spent so much of your life, your childhood, focusing on survival and your reality, and you didn't even, you know, you didn't, you say you didn't really have a musical background that came later, but you are a creative person, right? Because you are a tattoo, you were a tattoo artist. I mean, you're still an artist, you know, that doesn't leave you. When do you accept that? You know what I'm saying? Like, when do you accept, like, yo, this is me? I'm not just like what I was doing to survive.
Like, started to accept it, or when did I really accept it?
I guess both.
I started to accept it after, like, kind of getting an Interscope.
Yeah.
Because it was like, everything was like moving fast, and it was like we were just living life and doing music with my friends and stuff like that. And that's one thing. But then working with a total new artist that I never, like, working on Dreezy's album. Dreezy's album was the biggest thing for me. It was my first artist ever working with.
That was a good debut album, by the way.
Thank you. It was my first female artist ever working with. It was my first person from a different state. Like, everything was just new. And the way I got Dreezy's project, like, literally was like my second week at Interscope. I'm sitting in my boy Archie's office, and Joey literally comes and throws a CD on my lap like this, and I look, I say, what's this? I say, oh, listen to it. Listen to it. He's like, so what you think? I'm like, oh, I mean, it's a girl rapper. Like, cool, this your first project. And he's like, huh? Well, I'm thinking y'all about to give me some. Nigga, what? I'm thinking I'm about to come in, nigga, get the Fugees or get some shit, nigga. Put me on TDE, nigga. Like, what's up?
You better said the Fugees.
Something, nigga. But it was like, all right, cool. I knew she was new. It was like, cool, we got to figure it out. And it was like that process, and shout out my brother Dash, because me and Dash A&R'd that album together. That process showed me and Dash, like, you can do this at the highest level.
Yeah.
Because her first album had like a double platinum record, a platinum and a gold record, her first album. And like, who was this girl from Chicago who got signed off of freestyle? And it was like, but we made real records. And even records that people come up to me today and say they love.
Yeah.
Like, so it was like, that just opened, that was like, oh, nah, I do this.
Yeah.
And then like, Every album after that just opened it up a little more for me. But the biggest stepping stone was leaving Interscope. Because, like, yo, I never had a job before Interscope, really, besides being YG's tour manager. Never. Or working with Mustard, being, like, his assistant day-to-day, whatever I was at the time.
But you never clocked in nowhere.
Yeah, I never clocked in anywhere. I never understood, like,
hierarchy.
Yeah. And then, you know, going to label and figuring that out, and then being there for damn near 8 years, and then it's like, all right, cool, we part ways. And it's like, what's next? I never, like, that was like the scariest chapter in my life. It was like, all right, what am I about to do next? Like, hey, whatever I gotta do, whatever I do next has to be big. It has to be meaningful. It has to be respectful. Like, I have to push myself to the next level. And it's like, since then, that's when I really just owned it. It was like, yo, I gotta do everything that I believe in, believe I can do. And then that's what came with opening Creative Sounds. And then that led me here, dropping my collab with Sicko, just my first Grammy. You know, and the sky's the limit.
I copped the black hoodie too, the black sweatsuit.
Oh man, thank you, brother. Yeah. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate the love and support, man. If y'all in here, man, you know it's on Sicko page right now, man. First collab Sicko's ever done with an up-and-coming company, an up-and-coming brand. Shout out my brother, Ian Connor. Been here since the beginning. Bro came when I first got the building. This motherfucker used to look like an old nursing office from the 50s. And just everybody who's been here along the way, seeing Creative Sounds come and become what it is, and everybody who's spent money here, everybody who's booked a session, who's called, who's made a post. Like, I just thank everybody for supporting my dream and what I'm trying to do here, because at the end of the day, it's not a lot of people trying to push the envelope of the culture. Mm. At least here.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to be one of those guys, one of those people.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you left Interscope. You talk about that. But just while you got there, right? Well, after you got there, right? You know, people always talk about imposter syndrome. And, you know, this is something that's, this is more, this is corporate. This is structure. This is hierarchy. You know, you have to pay taxes and stuff. Did you feel like, you know, was there something in you that made you feel like, yo, maybe I don't really belong here?
Yeah, until you get that first plaque. Until you get that first plaque and it has nothing to do with everything that got you here. It's like, that holds so much weight. And then it's like, even every artist who I signed or every artist who I tried to sign, like, I always went for the underdog. Like, I'm the reason why Interscope know about the baby. Like, when I first found the baby, he was about to sign the Roc Nation. He ended up signing the Roc Nation. Something happened. He ended up getting out of his deal.
Yeah.
And then they called me back. But when I first called, I found out about the baby. I got the man's cell phone number. Like, let me try to get in contact. Like, it's things like that. Like, but nobody was sweating him.
Mm-hmm.
When I helped bring Rich the Kid over from 300, nobody gave a fuck about Rich the Kid. When I signed Aaron Ray, like, nobody gave a fuck about, like, what he was doing, or nobody cared that he wrote for Nicki Minaj and all that shit. Like, nobody cared. But it's like, me and Aaron put out one song before going on tour with her. And that was all off relationships.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, being able to be in a position and use the position that you are to put artists in a better position and see things happen in real time in front of them, it's like, that's what it's for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then that's what made me believe in myself even more. And just like the people come around, like, even shout out my homie Lord Quest, who's here right now. Like, I met Lord Quest when we were working on Aaron's first album on Platinum Fire. He produced Fuck Y'all. And he was like going through beats. He was playing R&B ass beats, and he kind of went past the sample. I'm like, yo, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
That's the only, we need something like that on this album. He like, you sure? Bro, and I'm like, yeah, this is like, it's dark. Like, Aaron's album was very bright.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Aaron was always talking about we need a record where Aaron's as honest and vulnerable as possible about everybody who didn't believe in him or think that he can make it to that next level. But we didn't have that record. And then we set with Lord Quest, and then that's how we came up with Fuck Y'all. And still to this day, it's like one of his craziest records at his show.
Yeah. What kind of person do you have to be to go from never having a job to having, like, the job of all
hustler,
jobs?
Like, it ain't, it's not about what type of, it's about, yo, your hustle.
Yeah.
Like, and when I say a hustler, I don't mean, like, a corner boy. I don't mean, like, somebody who's flipping cars. Like, bro, it's your drive. Yeah. Your personal hustle, your personal ambition. Like, can't nobody tell you can't do shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nigga who made a car that runs on air. It's a nigga who made a car that runs on water. Like, bro, how the fuck do the internet work? Like, how the fuck do AC work? How do you make a hot room cold from thin air? Like, it's like everything, even how we talking in this mic.
Yeah.
How the fuck do this work? Somebody said that they were going to do this. Everybody told them that they were crazy until they did it.
Yeah.
And then once they did it, them same people told them were crazy. Like, I always knew you were going to do this. I always knew you were striving for greatness. Like, bro. Like, that's this world we live in. Everybody's against you until they're with you. And it's like, bro, I see that every day. I see that every day. I see that every day. And I also seen people next to me who I thought was with me who were secretly against me but said they was with me. And I was with them because I thought they were with me.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that's still life. You don't change the person you are because you find out the person somebody else is. Like,
continue to be yourself always. Yeah, because no matter what.
The reason why you are in whatever situation you in is because of you. If it's a good situation, it's a bad situation. Sometimes you just got to take a second, take a breath, and retract your steps. Like, I ain't trying to put nothing that's going wrong for me or went wrong for me on nobody else. I take everything on my back that I've done, and I have to eat it.
Yeah.
And take it as a lesson, not an L. Take everything as a lesson from a friendship, from a deal, from a partnership, from a relationship, to family situation, like, whatever it is. It's like, bro, my dad left when I was one. I ain't gonna make that the reason why I'm not in my son's life. I'm not gonna make that the reason why I'm not gonna make it in life. It's like you gotta hold yourself accountable at some degree at some point. But it took me to get to the lowest point of myself to understand, like, sometimes I need to hold myself accountable. A lot of things that happened with me. For a while, I wasn't holding myself accountable. When I sat back and I'm like, you know what? Look at my part. Look what I did. I could have did this better. Or maybe I did this and this led to that. You know what? I'm going to just eat it. And now I feel like I'm a better person because it's not pieces of me that are, like, stitched off from somebody else.
Mm.
It's like I'm putting all those pieces back of myself back together based off of me and eating everything that happened.
Yeah.
Because this is my life. My life is my world, is my universe. Your life is your world, is your universe. Yeah, our worlds might come into the same atmosphere, but, bro, we're not the same person. We don't have the same values. We don't have the same thought process. We weren't raised in the same household. So just like something I can think is wrong because of my household, you can think is right because of your household. And who am I to tell you that you're wrong for that?
Mm-hmm.
For your perspective.
Yeah.
And just grow from that. Like, I ain't challenging and I'm not holding nobody to my personal pedestal.
Yeah.
I know what pedestal I hold myself to, and I respect every person for being a person. And however we might cross paths or how everything, things might happen and play out between us, that's how it might happen. But it's like, that's where it ends for me.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people use the trauma that other people gave them, and then, like, they develop, like, a sense of self based on that. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, like, no matter what happens to you, you know, it's up to you to make it happen.
Exactly.
For sure. So, you know, now you're an independent music business professional with the studio after leaving Interscope. Did you ever think there was a way to break into the music business without going through the traditional route of being an intern and working your way up the corporate ladder?
Bro, I honestly never even thought about that shit until it happened.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought, like, oh, I'm going to be an executive. I'm going to work at this label. I'm going to client. Like, bro, I don't. Like, I know some great executives who started at the bottom. And, like, bro, Manny Smith, he's incredible. He started at the bottom as an intern, worked his way all the way up to the top. Tunji, who is the chairman of Def Jam, used to be Manny Smith's intern, I believe. Now he's the chairman of a label. Like, it's like, nah, my boy Dash, bro, he started off as another professional homie in Chicago with the LEP Bogus Boys and with Herb and with with Bibby, and he would do anything. Like, and look at him now, he's the president of a label. So it's like, it's all in your personal drive. Then I know people who got in positions because of who they are, and then they were gone. So it's like, it just goes back to how hungry each person is.
Yeah. You spoke about your first project being Dreezy's debut album. You spoke about Aaron Ray and YG, Mustard. But what else have you worked on that people may not have heard about?
I don't know. If they haven't heard, they should just go Google me.
Yeah.
Look into it. I don't want. I'm not no broken record. I don't want to be sitting here just. I did this. I worked on it. Like, just go find out if you. Just type in my name. Go type in A&R. Like, and you can see it. But it's like, only things that I feel like are like never known about is like the Rich the Kid. Mm. Or like a Moneybagg Yo.
Yeah.
I have every Moneybagg Yo plaque.
Mm. Talk about it. Now, you know, you got the Grammy. Mentioned earlier, you won the Grammy for Boot Up. You know, that was a song from 2018, and you just got it in the mail. You saw the video you posted on Instagram. It was excited. Why did it take so long for you to even get that?
There's a lot of things, but I'd rather not speak on those things.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody who is a part of that record and who was a part of that record and the creation of that record. But you know, sometimes life just be lifing, bro.
Yeah.
But I congratulations. The main part plays back to me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put that on. I wouldn't put me not getting my credit on nobody else but me.
Yeah.
So I'll leave that there.
Yeah. Congrats, though, again.
Thank you.
On that, because that's major for sure. Not too many people could say that. Not the average person definitely can't say that.
Yeah, man. Change my name to Grammy Award winning Pusha Ride in that bit.
Oh, man. You know, what would you be doing if you never had the hustle in you to be a professional homie?
Man, shout out and thank you to YG. Because he gave me an option. I was hustling. I was flocking. And some weird shit happened. A weird situation happened. And bro had enough respect for himself to tell me about myself.
Mm.
And he gave me an option. As a real homie should. And I feel like things like that don't really be talked about or noted. It's like, my homie gave me that option. That option is what changed my life. It's because, like, nigga, you can either do this or you can do this. But I'm doing this. And if you doing this, fool, good luck to you.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, it makes you stop and think. It's like, because nobody owes you that. Nobody owes you, hey, fool, you can, nigga, I'm getting on this bus, nigga.
Yeah.
Here go a ticket. You can come or not. It's like, nigga, if you don't take this ticket, where you going to wind up? Yeah. What you going to, like, you know, and, like, even through everything, it's like I always, every time I always think about all this, it all goes back to that day. And YG giving me an option for my life. And it was like, before that, nobody ever, like, of course people care. Of course people tell you, like, you can be better. You can do so much better. You can, But nobody's ever, nigga, came to the fork in the road like, nigga, which way you going?
Yeah.
I'm going this way. And I thank God every day because somebody else got that same opportunity. And they told me I was just playing follow the leader. And look where my life turned out and look where theirs turned out. Mm. So it's like, I appreciate YG every day for that.
Yeah.
Like, that's what real friends do.
Yeah.
Like, fuck all the other shit. That's what a real friend do. When you wrong, tell you wrong. But not harp on you. Tell you, nigga, you can do this other.
Yeah.
Give you an opportunity and an option. And, you know, I took that opportunity. And that opportunity got me here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, you know? And I guess that's not, you know, that's something that maybe some people wouldn't feel comfortable even speaking about just on their journey in, like, the music business or something that's considered to be glamorous like this, you know? So, no, thank you for sharing that, for sure. You know, you've done so many things. You did tattoos, you threw parties. You know, I read that you owned a Christmas tree lot. You owned a store in the swap meet, worked as a manager in A&R. Now you own a studio. You know, you were doing these things as a means to survival, and I'm sure you really loved doing those things. But at the same time, did you know that you were also exposing yourself to, like, so many different cultures?
Fuck no, bro. I'm a hustler, bro. Yeah. Like, you put some leather in front of me, nigga, I'ma sell it. Like, I don't know how, I don't know the who, but I'ma figure out how to get that shit gone. Like, I don't, like, that's really, like, bro, for me, everything, like, bro, everything just go back down to hustling. Like, me and my right hand, rest in peace, Quick. Like, bro, we always said, like, we weren't gonna end up like our family. If we had to push ourselves every day, fight each other, we was gonna do better. And it was like, bro, alone, a lot of the time, like, bro, like, rest in peace to him, but, bro, a lot of times when a lot of the shit wasn't going my way, or I was fucked up or at the label, confused, wanting to quit, he all, bro, we from the blood.
Yeah, this is nothing compared to what we've been through, yeah.
And it's like, he, every time I was like, nah, this shit, he, like, he used to just check me so hard, and it had me so fucking frustrated, but like, you're right. I gotta eat it. I'm gonna figure this shit out. And it was just like, bro, that happens so many times to where, like, it's trained, like, you can get over any hump. It's when you show fear, the universe smell blood. Like, it's like, it's no way in hell. Like, most of the time, people tell you all the time, I was down to my last cent, I was down to the end, and I just didn't give up. And then I just got that one sale or that one whoopty, and it's just like, bro. And then it's you hear another gang of stories, man, I was trying, but it was so hard, and I just, like, nah, bro, keep trying. The universe rewards that. Like, I don't know through anything if it's the law of attraction or whatever the fuck it is. I don't fucking know. But, bro, if you give it your all, you don't get it all back. Plus more. Like, yeah. I done seen it happen, bro. Bro, it done been months, bro, where I've had $0 to my name, bro. Zero. Still fit the part. Still look the part. Nigga, can't even pay your rent. And then somebody call, hey, is Whoopty Whoop open this weekend?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, they open this weekend. Let me see. Hey, bro, I got this show for you. It ain't that much, but shit. They like, fuck it. And Cool is like, damn, that shit just paid my rent.
Mm.
And it's like, but you don't even think about those situations like that. And it'd be like, it's really because you didn't give up.
Yeah.
God sent something else your way. Like, I really believe it. In that, like, bro, I'm not supposed to have a fucking studio on Merrose.
Yeah.
Like, but I do, and I'm appreciative of it, and I'm fighting every day to keep the doors open and keep it cracking and keep more artists coming in here and try to compete with studios that have been around for 20, 30 years.
Especially out here, like, there's a studio everywhere.
I'm competing with the Record Plants, the Paramounts, the Westlakes, like, these big-name studios who Michael Jackson recorded in, Quincy Jones recorded in, like, them are the people I'm competing with. I'm competing with Record Plant, where Justin Bieber done sold 100 million records out of. Like, like, and I'm trying to get people to come here. Like, but it's like, it's doable. Mm-hmm. But it ain't going to be easy. And why they don't believe, I got to still fight the fight.
Yeah.
Because when they do believe, and when the next generation do believe, it's going to go down in history. You might not see it today. But next year, next month, 2 years down the road, this is going to be the hottest studio in Hollywood. And it's because of the energy that I'm putting in and what I believe in and how much I care about the music and how I allow people care about the music to be here.
Yeah.
Music first. So hell yeah, I plan for the universe to bless me. That ain't wood. But you know, like, bro, it's all about what you give, bro. Like, and it's like, even like, bro, everything takes sacrifice. Like, and it like, it don't matter what type of sacrifice it is. Everything takes sacrifice. But what are you willing to sacrifice? But you also got to keep your integrity when you sacrifice stuff.
Don't sacrifice everything.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sacrifice enough that you still know who you are.
Yeah.
When you can't look at yourself in the mirror, that's when you know you sacrificed too much.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right. Man, you know, you talk about that fork in the road that you face when, you know, YG told you, like, I'm doing this. You know, you still doing this. If you still doing that, then, you know, I can't fuck with you. But, you know, I want to know, like, through your travels, you know, because you did a little bit of everything. Like, who are you seeking guidance from, like, through everything, through your triumph, through your tribulations, through everything?
My peers.
Yeah.
Peers. I want to thank Terrace Martin.
He was a legend.
Extremely. Terrace Martin has helped me through every aspect of my career. And all the way back down to the first when I was YG's tour manager. I tell you a crazy fucking story, but I'm going to cut it short. And it just tells you, and this is how me and Terrace Martin was locked in. We worked on My Crazy Life, which was YG's first album. Terrace Martin went on the road with us to play the keys on the My Crazy Life tour. I was a tour manager on the My Crazy Life tour. YG was managed by this dude named Russ at the time. But he was the manager. He came on for a few days to oversee everything that was going on. But part of the thing that he was doing was overseeing Terrace Martin and getting Terrace Martin, who's already a superstar, equipped in with these young kids. One day, we were leaving the show, going to the next city, and we almost left Terrace Martin because I was the tour manager. It was my fault.
And you were new?
I was a kid. I was like 19.
Yeah.
But I ate it. Russ kind of disrespected me in front of everybody, said what he said. It's like, all right, cool, I'm going to eat it. After it happened, I pulled Terry to the side and said, look, keep it real with you. YG, my boy, so I'm going to eat this. But I ain't do this. And I'm going to just show you how much a real nigga I am. Look at these messages. And he said, bro, I respect you because as a street nigga, I would have expected you to do X, Y, and Z.
To the dude that disrespected you in front of everybody. Yeah.
You kept your integrity for your friend and your artist and you held that in and you talked to me on the side. That conversation led to Terrace working on Dreezy's first album, coming up with songs like Close to You. That led to him working on Aaron's first. Like, Terrence, any project I've worked on, every artist I've asked Terrence to work with, Terrence is there. Every time I call Terrence for advice or just to help me get through something, he's been there. And it all led to that, back to that conversation. And he reminds me of that conversation as many times he can get. Because any other person in my situation would have did something totally different or let the room know that it wasn't my fault. But if I would have let the room know it wasn't my fault, that would have just made more issues amongst the tour. And it was like, it's people like him. Honestly.
Yeah. Nah, man, that's, you know, that's, it's definitely for you to be so early in the industry and have like a, really like a mentor like that is major because he's a legend and in his world and, you know, and he's definitely instrumental in like bridging the gap between hip hop and jazz. So, yeah, shout out to Terrace Martin, man. That's definitely somebody I'd love to interview in the future. based off the research I've done, it seems like you're a prime example of a team player and waiting your turn. How important are those two things when you're trying to make it in the music business or any business?
I mean, I came in with my friends.
Yeah.
It wasn't my show.
Yeah.
So you came in with your friends, like, this, you're part of this team. Help this team. It ain't no I in team. A win for the team was always a win for me. It was mainly that early on. And then react to that question, bro, because I almost just said some crazy shit.
Nah, I'm just saying, what's the importance of, being a person that, just knows how to, wait their turn, and how important is that in business?
It kind of goes both ways. As far as for me, I came in with a team of people who were my friends, who were my peers, and we all had a common goal together. So even though it was, you could say it's waiting your turn, I wasn't a rapper.
Yeah.
I wasn't a producer. I was trying to be the best at what I can do. At the same time with Mustard trying to be the best that he can do, YG trying to be the best him, Ty trying to be the best him, Ace trying to be the best him. Being part of a team is carving your lane and trying to be the best person at that part and not trying to do everything.
Yeah.
You feel me? And it's once you understand that, I feel it comes easier to go into different steps and different places.
Yeah.
Once you can identify and really do something with your eyes. I don't want to say not with your eyes closed, but it's like, all right, cool. I started off throwing parties. I went from throwing parties to being a party promoter. Promoter and giving people shows. Where do that turn? You know what I'm saying? Everything kind of just led into the next chapter, into the next step. But it's like, bro, if I never knew how to throw parties, how could I get a crowd of people?
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? So, it all just, every step came from understanding the last step, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, for me, I was just talking to the owner of I can't say what company, the company yesterday, but it's like, bro, we're from different backgrounds. We're from different states. We're 15 years apart,
mm-hmm.
yet we kind of had the same start.
Mm.
Club promoters become managers or A&Rs or art. Bro, it's all the same entertainment field, same entertainment world. It's like, where do you take the business? I was sitting here yesterday while I had a session. Shout out my boy, Slade the Monster. He was out here. He had a camp going on with Warner Chapel. But I was sitting here just watching Ray. The dude who ended up becoming Ray's manager was the dude who was announcing him at the show. It's just this part of the industry leads to this part. Yeah. It's about how much you care and how much energy you put into it and how much you really honestly know and doing good based on what you know. Cause it's a lot of people who do bad business and do fuck shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, cleaner you stay, the further that goes, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, do you think it takes a lot of mental strength to be a person who, cause you said earlier that, you came into this, but you weren't the star, right? So you think it takes a lot of mental strength to just be a person who was in an industry full of stars, but you have a background role amongst the stars?
I'd rather be a star to the star than a star.
Mm.
I enjoy having the freedom that I have to a degree. I want to go to the grocery store.
Yeah. Live a regular life.
But at the same time, it feels good when an artist be like, hey, bro, I'm in town. I want to come play you my album. Or you go to somebody else's city. Oh, hey, bro, you out here and then come fuck with me, or I'm coming to the, like, it's like, I love that. But I would hate to go through what they go through. They can't, like, go to a restaurant, like,
and eat. Unless they book out the whole restaurant or something. Yeah.
It's like, so it's like, I don't know. It depends on what you're doing it for at the end of the day also. Like, of course, I'd be lying if I didn't say, like, I want to go down in history. I want to be one of the dopest A&R creative-ass people. Like, in 100 years, they're still going to study P. Diddy.
Facts.
500 years, they're probably still going to study P. Diddy.
Yeah.
In 1,000 years, they're probably still going to study P. Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
In 10,000 years, they're probably still going to study P. Diddy. It's like, he'll live on forever. Like, that's the real definition of being immortal. People studying you and want to understand how you did the things you did to get to where you went, and how'd you break so many artists, and how'd you continue to reinvent yourself. Like, bro, it's a Diddy, it's a P. Diddy, it's a Sean Diddy, it's a Puff Daddy, it's a Puff Daddy Cone. It's like, but he's all one entity.
Yeah.
But that same one entity done broke 50 art, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, that's where I want to, that's like, I don't just want to be the person who was an A&R, made a couple dollars, and nigga.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
Like, even going to get that Grammy, bro, like, that is because I feel like that's part of my legacy. That's something that my kids can understand or see or Google. Like, it's one thing, like, being in this shit when you're alive. But it's another thing living on after. And it's like, bro. Like, bro, I was just watching, like, bro, what the fuck was I just watching? Fucking, it's this new series on Netflix about, Nefertiti? Cleopatra.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're in 2023.
And he's still talking about her.
Still talking about what she did and how she did it and how she finessed and how she was powerful and how she cared about her people. How many thousand years ago? Ain't she before Christ?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I want.
But you can, you want that, but you still want that freedom to be a regular person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But however that goes with the freedom of being a regular, I'm happy with being with the freedom that I have now. But if I had to give up that freedom
to be remembered,
so that UCLA does a course on me in 2058, for sure.
Yeah.
Because that's the greater good. Like, I feel like my life story is a testament. Even if it's only a testament to me right now. It's like, it's showing that you can come from against all odds and still become and come out positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's priceless.
Yeah.
Me. And I still got my integrity. And I haven't sold out or did anything that I felt was against myself. Like, I'm going back to get the things that I felt people took from me, if anything.
Mm. You know, Push, you very well connected in this industry, and, you know, oftentimes relationships in this industry can be transactional. You know, how important are real friendships and real relationships to you, especially somebody who came into the industry with their friends?
Honestly, I wouldn't be this far without some of my relationships. Like, some of these relationships, these friendships that you get along these years are some of the things that help you mentally be okay for what's going on.
Yeah. yeah, you know, you're well connected in this industry, and you know, oftentimes in this industry, relationships can be very transactional. So, how important are real friendships and real relationships to you as a person who came into this industry with your friends?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a weird industry. It has its ups and downs, and when you're on the way up, everybody is gonna seem like they're your real friend.
Yeah,
and you're not really gonna know that until you coming back down, or to when you ain't got a hit record.
Yeah,
and niggas not answering the phone. But that's just part of this game. I just feel like you just have to stay grounded and honest with yourself. And honest with the people around you, and like pay attention to who's around you and why they're around you.
Yeah.
And from there you'll be solid.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like you draw inspiration by from and influenced by so many. Who do you think you influence?
Man, who would I like to influence? Who do I think I influence?
I get both.
I mean, I would like to influence anybody who's came from a struggle, anybody who's ever thought that they couldn't make it, anybody who ever thought that the world was against them. Like, I am here to show you guys living proof that you can overcome any and every one of those obstacles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like nothing is given, but anything can be taken. You know, but, like, you can't take life for granted while you're taking things. So, like, just stay focused. I would love to influence everybody.
Yeah.
I would love for everybody to feel like my story sticks to them, or because I did it, they can do it. But, you know, truth be told, that's not how it usually plays out. But, I mean, like, just for anybody who can take any piece of inspiration for anything that I've done, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, bro, to all them hood kids who's out there want to be an A&R, yes, you can be an A&R. I was one of the youngest A&Rs ever hired at Interscope. And put out the records to back it up. And it's like, that holds its own weight in itself. So I just feel like, yeah, man, whoever, anybody out there, bro, anything I did that they feel like is a champion moment for them, hold on to it. It's like, bro, like, kind of like reading the Bible. Like, this fits to you, this may not.
Yeah.
Like, you got to take bits and pieces and what works for you. And attach that to your life, because certain things that I went through, this next person might not have went through that. So they like, well, I didn't go through that, how can I? But it's not about that. It's not about what you went through. It's how you overcome any obstacle.
Yeah.
So like, it's really anybody out there. It can be a rich kid, it can be a poor kid, it can be a blind person, it can be like anybody. If they feel inspired by my story and it helps them get to the next chapter in their life, I'm grateful.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to ask you about the businesses that you're a part of. And I want you to tell me, like, what's the most important thing you learned from that business. So I'm going to just list, you know, all of the ones that I know of. So, tattoos.
Show me that I can move around and move my hustle around legitimately.
Having a video game.
Having a video game was honestly me giving my life to the world. Because if you ever, like, hop out streets of L.A., it don't seem that deep. But to me, it's deep. Like, I'm from L.A., I moved around this city my whole life, every part from the east side to the west side, downtown, uptown, like every part, hustling, staying above water, staying away from the ops or any anything negatively against me. I'm just trying to stack my bread. And like, so if you know me or if you've seen me throughout life, that's really how I move. And I ain't moving, like, I don't need 20 people to move.
Yeah.
You might, if I'm not with an artist that I work with or something, you might see me somewhere by myself.
Yeah.
Hustling, getting to it.
Yeah.
And like, that was the idea behind Hop Out Streets of LA.
Owning a vintage clothing store.
Man, owning a vintage clothing store was, I needed to do, I was at a weird place in life, and I wanted to do something that excited me again. And I love clothes. So like, owning and creating that vintage clothing store was like, just like something fresh for me. Doing something that I wanted to do. Didn't care about the outcome or how it came, how it turned out. It just, it was for me. So, yeah.
Okay. And having a store in this Lawson Swap Meet.
Having a store in this, so like, bro, I'm from the east side.
Yeah. That's where the Swap Meet is, right?
Nah, it's on Slauson. But like, a lot of people from my side of town, like, that's the furthest they really go. Like, we don't go to malls.
Yeah,
like, I can be honest, like, bro, I probably went to like the Fox Hill or Crenshaw. I didn't probably go to like the Fox Hill Crenshaw Mall. I remember that I went there until I was probably like in like 10th grade, 9th grade. Like, I remember going to the Slauson for everything. So like, that was a staple for me. Like, and then it was like when I went from Fremont to Westchester. My style, the way I dress and everything changed. And then, you know, on the west side, you start hearing about these other brands, these skateboard brands, stuff like that. So you start being on Fairfax, start seeing what's going on there. That life played a lot into Westchester.
Yeah.
That life didn't play into the east side. So like, damn, well, I go back to the east side. Niggas know what Pink Dolphin is, but nobody got no Pink Dolphin and shit that. Like that. So like, all right. When I did the my shop, and the Slauson was called the Shop Off Fairfax. So I sold everything on Fairfax, off Fairfax. So I just was going to buy all that old shit and things like that and selling in the hood.
Yeah. Introducing them to some, you know, some different things.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's fire, though, because I feel like in the old New York, mom and pop stores was a thing, and those things don't exist anymore. You know, so in LA, like, that's still cool that y'all have y'all local things that you could just walk to and get fly, come back home, go to school, whatever. Being the A&R at Interscope.
Dream come true. It was a dream.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, it really showed me that the sky is the limit. Like, in that, nobody can box you in.
Yeah.
I'll leave that there.
All right. Managing YG.
See, it was crazy from starting off at like a professional homie and part of Team YG and be the person who answered the calls and stuff like that to actually being the manager and being part of the rollout and getting the features and doing all the stuff. It was like, it was so real. Like, what is like that so real loop, like, of life? Like, it's like from being on one side of it to being on the other side. It's dope. Like, and it's like, at the same time, it's like, that's really my friend.
Yeah.
It's really my brother. So, like, no matter what, nigga care for how things are and come out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like, it was greatest experience.
Yeah.
Great experience.
Mm-hmm. Owning the studio.
Man, this brought life back full circle. Because for a while, and I really don't talk about this, like, I was like kind of like deadbeat to music. Like, I was still working in music, but I lost my taste for it.
Lost the passion?
Yeah. And it was a lot behind that that was just like, yo, you fight so hard.
Yeah.
And then it just like, all right, cool. And then it was like, artists really, sometimes, at one point I got to a point where I'm like, damn, bro, these artists really just don't have loyalty. How can you start something with somebody and then they say it's co-founded by somebody else who you hired?
Mm.
Like,
damn.
That was like the biggest kick in the face. And then, so like, I needed this. I needed to do this to fall back in love with music. Because like where I'm at mentally and physically and in the music now, I was lost.
Yeah.
And I'm back.
You felt like you were like jaded by the industry?
1,000%.
Yeah.
Not even by the industry, jaded by loyalty.
Yeah. Or lack thereof.
Yeah. And it's like, you see how when the people who you feel are the closest to you treat you in the public eye and how that make other people feel like they can move with you or treat you. So then that jade you could like, damn, bro, I'm this street nigga who not trying to be on no street shit, but niggas trying to play you.
Cause yeah.
Trying to be corporate and not street. Like, do I got to remind you
who I am?
Like, and then it's like, but it's like, you become even a more powerful person when you don't even let that change you.
So, yeah. It's true. Yeah, learning that, the discipline and self-control. And lastly, flocking. I'm saying lastly, flocking. Like, what was the last thing you learned?
About flocking?
Yeah, no, what did you learn from that?
See, bro, like, this be the thing, like, I didn't have nothing, so I was flocking to get something.
Yeah.
I wasn't flocking to stay rich or flocking, like, it was like, nigga, bro, no. Like, nigga, that was my only, that's what I was good at.
Yeah.
So I was doing what I was good at.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like, I ain't take nothing from that, bro.
I understand that. And
it's a chapter in my life that I would never hide from. I would never dismiss. I would never act like I didn't do it or like look at people differently who do it. But it's like, I know what I was doing and why I was doing it. Like, and it's like, you know, I'm gonna have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, nah, it wasn't cool. But it's like, shit, it's what I knew.
Yeah. And for, you know, people who don't know what that is, you listen to YG's first album, you kind of have, like, a perspective on that, I guess.
It's funny, man. If you got YG, if you have YG's first album, and you have the actual, the hard copy, if you open,
you see the whole, like him getting put on and stuff in the booklet.
The flocking photo, that's me.
Damn. Yo, and I threw away, like, all my CDs. Damn. I don't even remember.
The insert, that flocking photo. Guy outside the house flocking, that's me.
That's crazy. Damn, I bought that physical too. We talk about all the different business ventures you've been a part of, but you know, down the line, long term, is there one business that you just want to put all your energy, time, resources?
Nah, man, into? I'm honestly, bro, I'm trying to get fucking filthy rich so I can do it like Magic Johnson did. Like, I want there to be a Pusher's Fridays. I want there to be a Pusher's Starbucks. I want there to be a Pusher's McDonald's. I want there to be a Pusher's Uber Tuba. Like, everything. Like, I want to join into the Monopoly game and have something connected with everybody with my name on it in Los Angeles so I can live throughout. Because it's like, think about it, bro. Then this is so crazy. Like, I know Magic Johnson was a basketball player.
Yeah.
My son does it.
And why would he?
But he knows him as a millionaire.
Yeah.
And an investor. He knows him as, what did he just ask me the other day? Because Magic Johnson just did, what did they just buy?
A team, like part ownership of a team, I guess. I think it was...
No, it's BET. I think him and, like,
Tyler Perry's.
Him, Tyler Perry, P. Diddy, and somebody else trying to buy beats.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's like, that's what my son's going to know him for.
Mm. Yeah.
That's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, throughout life, people get known, like, it's just crazy, like, I was, all right, like, I have, this is the last thing I'm going to say. I had this conversation with my boy Burger the other day. I'm a Kobe fan. Yeah. Die hard. I grew up, I'm from L.A., that's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
His son's from L.A. His son is 14, 15. He had the nerve to tell me his son is a Kobe fan. I said, bro, your son don't even know who Kobe is. Your son is a LeBron James fan. He said, bet. I said, bet.
But how you going to tell him what his son is a fan of?
Because he believed, because he know Kobe, his son know. I called, I said, hey, BG, who's your favorite basketball player? He said, of all time or right now? And I said, no, of all time. He said, LeBron James? I said, who of right now? Steph Curry? Because that's what's right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, I have to continue. I plan on continue to reinvent myself every decade, adding new pillars and new different businesses and different things for the community every decade. Like, if I can, I plan on trying to go buy Fremont High School and turn it into Pusha Rod's High School. Like, that's the type of shit I'm on. Like, in real life.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I want to go down in history. Like, that's how I want to be remembered. Like, through the next few generations.
Yeah.
And just show how you can stay grounded and still become wealthy. And still be a pillar of your community. Same thing Nipsey was doing. Like, a lot of this stuff was implanted by bro.
Yeah.
Like, but it's like, you got to speak your own truth and live your own life. But yeah, like, even like having a brand, like, bro, Nipsey used to preach to us all the time about, bro, you have to build a brand, build a brand. Fuck all that other shit. It's your ownership, your brand. Build that shit, sell that shit. Like, and like, always sticks in the back of my head. So, like, everything I did, like, even with trying to do the vintage store, like, I was trying to create a brand.
Yeah.
Like, here, I'm creating a brand, but I have the lifestyle that goes more with this brand because people trust me for the music. And if you don't trust me, trust that Grammy sitting right there, motherfucking counter.
We got to put that on the camera, man. We got to.
I grab that bitch. Yeah. You want me to grab it now or at the end?
Oh, we could. Well, this is the end. This is the end. We right there. I got like two more questions for you. What's next for Pusha Rod?
Stay tuned.
All right.
I can't tell you what's next, but it's something. Hey, man, just know, man. Announcements keep getting bigger and better.
I believe it. I believe it for sure. And, you know, my last question for you, you know, the name of this podcast is Words Matter Podcast. So, you being a person who works in the music business, you own a studio where, you know, if there's no words, people not laying down vocals, it doesn't exist. So why do words matter to you?
Why do words matter to me? You know what's so crazy? Words do matter to me, but it's more of the action behind the words. But words matter because words is that contract for whatever comes afterwards. Like, if I tell you I'm going to do something, I got to do it because I told you I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
The action happened afterwards, but I gave you my word that I'm going to do it, so I got to stand on that. So I feel like that's why words matter.
That's a perfect answer. Yo, thank you, Pusha Rod, for allowing me in your space again. This time to interview you. Talking about your life, you know, talking about your life, your story, your ups and downs. And definitely I'm looking forward to, and I'm sure the people looking forward to, everything you got going on in the future, man. You definitely a hustler. definitely, when they say Renaissance man, you definitely fit that description for sure. So, yeah, man, thank you once again, and Words Matter.
Appreciate you guys for having me at Words Matter. Let me show y'all this gram.
Fire. Oh, all the cameras. Crazy, man. First Grammy on Words Matter. First physical Grammy. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Ayana Depa. She was an engineer for her. She got that Grammy. But to see the physical joint is different. I never had aspirations of being a rapper, so I didn't. I never thought I'd see that. Great. All right, bud. Words Matter.
All right.